Please note that the views expressed by the speakers on this call may or may not represent the views of the National Liberty Alliance.
Good evening,
hi.
Folks.
Thank you.
Just a second.
Good evening, folks.
This is Thursday, 31 August, 2017, and this is the Committee of Safety call. Welcome. And go ahead.
Okay. Hi. This is Nikki, and I'm from Pennsylvania, and I got the duty tonight. John, I don't believe is going to be on the call unless he is now. Are you here, John? Who's speaking, please? John? Okay, I guess it is me. So what I'm going to be doing, what John asked me to do is to move forward with his plan for establishing leadership within the committees of safety. And to establish leadership, one has to know where they came from and where they're going as far as the documents that form this country or form this nation. And especially the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. So with that said, I am going to refer you to a link that, not link, a link, I posted a few links that I'm going to be talking from this presentation, and they will be found on the COS site. If you go down into the comments section, you should be able to locate them and follow along with me, okay? And any questions so far? Okay, having no questions, it's pretty much what I am going to do beginning now. Okay, as you all know, this country began with the Declaration of Independence, is how we kind of look at it. We call it the Declaration of Independence, and yet it never said that on the document itself. It said in Congress, July 4th, 1776, and it said the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. And the founders who penned that document, what we call the Declaration of Independence, we'll just call it the Declaration from henceforth. Okay, when they penned that, they had a good idea of history, where they came from, what has happened, transpired over thousands of years with just the same repetition over and over and over again. So when they penned that, first paragraph, they accurately pointed out the problems, and the problems are the same that we have today as they were back in 1776, and the solutions are absolutely the same as they were in 1776. And you can even go back further than that. You can go back to the first century and what was being dealt with the, you know, the fellow they call Jesus or Yeshua, you know, during that first century and under Roman law. And it says, when in the course of human events, and we are, of course, dealing with human events, okay, it becomes necessary for one people, that's a unified people, and probably the Hebrew word for that would have been echad. So one people to number one. It doesn't have a number one there, but from now on, put that number one in there, because number one, dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another. Now, political bands can be a variety of things. It can be a mass of people with the same political, you know, thought processes like the Whigs and the Tories back in 1776, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes back in the first century. And today we have the Republicans and the Democrats. And the bar, members of the bar who kind of hold things together for them. So these are the bands which are connecting us. That is done through statutory law and anything that you would consider adhesive or unconscionable type of contract. So Number one was to dissolve the political bands which have connected them to with another. And to two, there was a second mandate in that first paragraph. And the second mandate was to assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. Laws of nature and nature's God, very simple. Ten Commandments. You know, stop lying, stop cheating, stop murdering, whatever, coveting what somebody else has. Don't swear by a name that can be any name. You know, name. On our money is printed, "In God We Trust." Is that the God of wealth or is that the God of creation? Two different gods. One is Mammon and the other one, of course, is Yahweh or Yeshua or however you want to refer to him. And then there is, of course, the one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, when we pledge allegiance to the flag. Well, again, ask that question. Which God is this? And who's got the liberty to do what they're doing to the people who have been granted the right, if we would just assume it, to, or the entitlement, if we would just assume it, to assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which, you know, the Ten Commandments, you know, basically, and I'm putting it in kind of like a the simplest kind of explanation that I can at this particular point in time. So the third part of this is that a decent respect to the opinions of mankind required that they should, number three, is declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Committees of Safety did just that. They follow through beautifully. They went ahead and they declared the causes with this declaration that impelled them to the separation. They sought to assume amongst the powers of the earth that separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitled them, and that was the 1777 Articles of Confederation. That was America's first, it was actually America's first constitution. And you can find that right there in the Library of Congress, and the Library of Congress prefaces that Articles of Confederation as perpetual union. So it didn't go away, it's just been hijacked, it seems. The Continental Congress adopted the Articles, and this is reading from the website that is on the link in the comments section. The Continental Congress adopted the Articles of Confederation, the first Constitution of the United States, on November 15, 1777. However, ratification of the Articles of Confederation by all 13 states did not occur until March 1, 1781. The Articles created a loose confederation of sovereign states and a weak central government, leaving most of the power with the state governments. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's what the 10th Amendment was all about, isn't it? Is that whatever is not there in the Constitution, you know, hey, it's reserved to the state and the people. The need for a stronger federal government soon became apparent and eventually led to the Constitutional Convention in 1787. Okay, and that's presently what we have. And that's what the... that's what the course is all about. So that's why I'm doing this as a background for it, okay? The present United States Constitution. Sure.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Yes.
The Constitution was written in 1787, but it is considered the 1789 Constitution.
Right, and it says it goes on to say in this in the Articles of Confederation, in the preface for the Articles of Confederation, it goes on to say the need for a stronger federal government soon became apparent and eventually led to the Constitutional Convention of 1787. The present United States Constitution replaced the Articles of Confederation on March 4th, 1789. So that's when it was replaced. The Articles of Confederation were replaced. And I'm bringing up the Articles of Confederation because with all of the tearing down of statutes and things like that down in the South, and it's a lot of emotional hype because the real purpose of getting rid of any kind of memorabilia about the Confederation is to get rid of the fact that we do have something to fall back on if caca hits the fan, basically. Okay? That there is a perpetual union, and it is exactly what the kind of government was that we were supposed to have and really had been usurped over the long run by amendment. And I'm not going to go into all that. I promise I'll be a good girl tonight, Robert. Okay? Now, nonetheless, I do want people to take this course, though, because I took it when it first came out. That was 2 years ago or so, 2015. And it was excellent. It was very good. Okay, but I want to give a little bit of history, too, though, because without the history, it's difficult to learn what should be happening under this Constitution that we have and what is actually happening under the Constitution we have. And I am going to, especially with the 13th and the 14th Amendment, because the 13th Amendment, when read in this proper way, it suggests that you can't have involuntary servitude, but hey, listen, if Congress, because the second section of that 13th Amendment says Congress shall have the power to enforce that 13th Amendment by appropriate legislation. When that 13th Amendment is read, it says there shall be no involuntary servitude, and then there's a comma, except, and I'm kind of doing it off the top of my head here, except if duly convicted of a crime within the United States or any place subject to its jurisdiction. Okay? So the fact is that there is voluntary servitude that is allowed. So when we check that little box and say we're a U.S. citizen, what are we saying? We have, by secession and acceptance, as Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, put ourselves into a position where we can be held in voluntary servitude if we do not comply with the laws that are being made by the central government that has overstepped its bounds within the states. And I say all that, now I'm going to go back. There's another site, I think I gave you the link for this. And this comes from British History Online, and this goes back to 1715 to see how things were going there, especially with naturalization, because the 14th Amendment says anybody who is born in the United States or naturalized, okay, becomes a citizen of the United States. Now, remember, the 14th Amendment comes after the 13th Amendment that allows for voluntary servitude. So I'm going to read this. This is from 1715, and it is from the Calendar of State Papers, Colonial America and the West Indies, Volume 28, 1714, 1715, and it's volume, I'm a little bit rusty with my Roman numerals. Okay. It's looks like XLVL, whatever that is. Is someone good at that? Go ahead and tell us by the end of the call here. Okay. In this, it talks about Hunter. George Hunter was the governor of New York and New Jersey during the 1700s, and he then became governor of Jamaica and that's Jamaica, British West Indies, and he died there. Nonetheless, in return for passing the Naturalization Act, okay, this is going back to 1715, so there was a Naturalization Act in 1715. In return for passing the Naturalization Act, Hunter obtained from the Assembly an act for settling the revenue for support of His Majesty's revenue for 5 years. Hunter was now able to declare with a sigh of relief that he had at last laid a foundation for a lasting settlement in this hitherto unsettled and unforgivable province. So that's the way they were looking at colonial America back then. Exception might be taken to the provisions by which the assemblyman's allowance, were paid out of the revenue and by which the money raised was to be lodged in the hands of the country's treasurer instead of those in the receiver general. But it was necessary that the former should receive the money allotted as a sinking fund against bills for £6,000 ordered to be issued. An agency act was also passed by which John Chapante, it looks like, who had long been an agent of the four independent companies, now remember, these were all charters, these colonies, was appointed by the joint action of the governor, council, and assembly to act as an agent for the country in London, not here in America, but in London. The Naturalization Act, which was ardently desired by the French and the Dutch of the province, declared that all who were resident in 1683 and had since died seized of land should be deemed to have been naturalized, and further naturalized all Protestants of foreign birth resident in 1715. They just kind of took over with this Naturalization Act, and they naturalized everybody for the purpose of revenuing them, let's say, okay? And let me see. It was largely through the mediation of Lewis Morris that this compromise was finally achieved and the long dispute over the revenue set at rest for a generation. Hunter rewarded him, meaning Morris, this Lewis Morris, by appointing him Chief Justice, an appointment upheld by the Council of Trade. Okay, so we went from the Council of Trade to Trade and Plantations and the Council of Trade and what do they call it now? It's the World Trade Organization, correct? So There's a history behind all of this, and it's important to know this, to know where our elected officials are taking us in the long run, these reconstructed political bands. Now, with that said, I'm going to go to one more thing, because you saw that in 1781 is when the Articles of Confederation were put together, okay? I'm saying put together. I'm looking for things on my computer right now. Okay, in 1782, here in Pennsylvania, now remember, all these delegations and conferences were here in Pennsylvania, so Pennsylvania has got a rich history. And, of course, being in Pennsylvania, I kind of go through some of the Pennsylvania stuff. And with that said, I'm going to go to an act that was passed in 1782, and in Pennsylvania, those who were making up the legislature back in 1782, this is a year after, a mere 6 years after the Declaration was passed or was submitted, in 1782, they needed to pass legislation to prevent an act to prevent the erecting any new and independent state within the limits of this commonwealth. And here's what they said in section 4 of that particular document. It says, and whereas notwithstanding the premise, this house has received information that, and listen to the words they're using here, because these are the kind of people that we have to watch out for if we want to really make this Committees of Safety work and work as they should in the kind of government that we are told that we have. Okay, this house has received information that diverse, ill-disposed persons, so watch for that personality, setting at naught every principle of public virtue and pursuing their ambitions and interested views, have caused great uneasiness among the good people of this state by manifesting the most criminal design of setting up a distinct state or government within this commonwealth. Got that? Ill-disposed persons setting at naught every principle of public virtue and passing their ambitious and interested views want to set up a distinct state or government within this commonwealth. Now, that was frowned upon in 1782, yet by the time that Constitution 1787 was put together, they found a way in Article 4, Section 3, just before it says, we promise to every state this republican form of government. It says, new states, you know, may be erected. Okay, it actually says it may be erected by the consent of the legislatures and the Congress. When you read that, it says no new states will, okay? But then it goes on to say, but this is how it can be done. So look for these kind of bits of, we'll tell them this, but we're going to leave a loophole in here so we can get away with it. Go on to Section 5 of that particular document, 1782, that act to prevent the erecting of new and independent states within the limits of the Commonwealth, because it says, be it therefore enacted, and it is hereby enacted by the representatives of the freemen of this Commonwealth, of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in General Assembly met, and by the authority of the same, that if any person or persons shall erect or form or shall endeavor to erect or form any new and independent government within the boundaries of this commonwealth as described in the charter and settled between this state and the state of Virginia, such person or persons being thereof legally convicted in any court of oyer and terminer shall be adjudged guilty of high treason. Okay, so I just want to preface everything that you learn in this Constitution course to kind of keep that in the back of your mind and go from there. But, okay, so on the website, you will find that there is a link to how to go about getting signed up for that course. And I'm going to read from what was put out in 2015 by National Liberty Alliance when this was put up. The Constitution for the United States of America. And I'm going to just read through it as it is. The tax which will be paid for education is not more than a thousandth part of what will be paid to the kings, priests, and nobles who will rise up if we leave the people to ignorance. Okay? So good education system was mandatory. This Thomas Jefferson had said that. I know of no safe depository, and Thomas Jefferson goes on to say, I know of no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves, and if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their decision by education. This is the true corrective corrective of abuses of constitutional power. Thomas Jefferson said that. Now, you got some background as far as naturalization and how they just kind of come in, swoop down. If you ever wonder what happened to the Protestants when they came to this country, they either complied or they were duly convicted of a crime. I mean, it's just that simple. Okay, so in the a table of context or contents, you will see there is an introduction. There is going to be quizzes all throughout. The Declaration of Independence will be gone through. The chapter 1, chapter 2 is the title and the preamble. Chapter 3 is legislative powers, Article 1 of the Constitution. Chapter 4 is Article 2, executive powers. Chapter 5 is Article 3, the judicial powers. Chapter 6 is the full faith and credit, and that is Article 4 of the Constitution. Chapter 7 is Article 5, the amendment process. Chapter 7 also includes Article 6, the supreme law of the land, Article 7, ratification, Article 5, and then you have a quiz for all of them. And going back to Article 6, Article 6 is, you know, that includes the Articles of Confederation as well as, you know, those who believe they might have had ancestors that were at the bottom of that mountain when Moses brought down the Ten. So just realize it, any engagement or how was it worded, any contracts and engagements and debts. And we are indebted to the land and all that is in it because that gives us life. And we have liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Chapter 8 is the Bill of Rights. Chapter 9 is the amendments to the Constitution. Chapter 10, the county sheriff. Chapter 11, the sureties of peace. Chapter 12, Kennedy and the press. Conclusion, return to self-governance. All about returning to self-governance, the kind of governance that we believe we have. However, just keep in mind that when these colonies started, they started as a feudalistic endeavor for the kings and nobles of another country, and then it just transferred over to corporations and still corporate feudalism. And that's a family business, guys. Okay, so a study of our founding documents. And this is the introduction to the course. In the words of Thomas Jefferson, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. Therefore, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It's not for, oh, yeah, we'll go ahead and vote for this, or let's, you know, go ahead and put on another amendment to all these other amendments that got us into this condition of voluntary servitude with which if we do not comply, we're going to be duly convicted of a crime. So think about this, guys, okay? Think about it. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. And like I said, you know, taking down the statutes in the South and all of that, that's not what it's about. They'd like to wipe out that Confederacy altogether because the Articles of Confederation is perpetual. That is still there for the people. America has lost her way and has become apathetic, and unless we can throw off the shackles, this is number one, whoever wrote this, probably John that wrote it. America has lost her way and has become apathetic unless we can, number one, throw off the shackles of dependency in big government. Number two, acknowledge God. And that's exactly what the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence was all about, or Declaration was all about. Here, I'm still saying it. Okay. And that is dissolve the political bands. It's easier to dissolve them than throw them off. I mean, that takes more effort than just dissolving them. And acknowledge God. In other words, the Ten Commandments. You know, what are they doing to lie to us, to steal from us, to covet what we have, to, you know, capitalize on us, whatever, okay? And number three, to learn of his principles. And four, take on the responsibility of self-government. Liberty will be lost to history once again, perhaps forever. The foundation of American government is common law, without which we would be something else. Maybe Bush or Obama's America. Ben Franklin, when asked, what kind of government do we have, said, a republic, if you can keep it. And that only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. John Adams said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. George Washington said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Samuel Adams said, the sum of all is, if we would most truly enjoy the gift of heaven, let us become a virtuous people, then shall we both deserve and enjoy it. Natural law, aka common law, also known as common law, found in his book, and he's got a capital H there, is that gift from God. So I'm assuming he means the Bible, his book. Is the gift of God, and that our founding fathers rediscovered by grace and claimed for themselves and their posterity. History recalls that common law was first gifted to Israel in 1407 BC, a people who enjoyed 400 years of prosperity and security before losing it to immorality and their rejection of God, rediscovered by the Anglo-Saxons, brought to England about 400 AD, and lost again due to immorality and the rejection of God. Founded once more in 1789, are we now destined to lose this precious gift by succumbing to immorality and the rejection of God? And this is asked in here, and I suppose that it was John that asked it, and it goes right along with Article 6 of that U.S. Constitution. Today we stand at that brink and about to lose that most precious gift of heaven, not because of tyrants, not because of the prince and power of the air of this world, which are the judgments of God upon our nation, but because we too have lost our way, becoming demoralized and thereby rejecting once again the King of Israel. Is our hearing so dull? Can we no longer hear his plea and just one more time at least, or plead just one more time at least? Come unto me, and he's quoting here from Matthew 11:28-29, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. Unalienable rights. The word unalienable is synonymous with inalienable, which means incapable of being alienated, that is, sold or transferred, and that's from Black's Fourth Law Dictionary. We the people, through our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, the Declaration, let's call it, affirmed that nature's God entitled the people to the laws of nature, asserting that it is an unalienable right which man's statute cannot undermine. The laws of nature are unchangeable, a perfect lamp unto our feet, indisputable justice which is the product of salvation attained by grace, retained through morality. To the contrary, human laws, codes, and statutes which are born, live for a season, and die. are the instrumentations of tyrants that we broke away from when we declared when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to, what? Number one, I'm throwing that in there, dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to, number two, assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should, number three, and I'm throwing three in there, declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Goes on to say, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. However, it doesn't say because we hold these truths to be self-evident, and it doesn't say although we hold these truths to be self-evident. And here's the kicker here, okay? We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator. Who is the creator if we say because? Wouldn't that be the laws of nature and nature's God? I should say nature's God. But then again, if their creator, if they said, although we hold these truths to be self-evident, then the creator would have been, what, the city of London, the crown, wealth, the god of mammon? So hear these things, okay, because it's important to think outside of the box that we've been typically taught to think in. If you just take a moment and fold your arms, okay, just, you know, fold your arms for a moment. Now, unfold them and fold them with the other hand on top of just the opposite of how you normally fold them. What does that feel like? If anybody is doing it, just think about what that feels like. That's what thinking outside the box is, you know, kind of like. Or if you fold your hands, and then wherever you have your thumb under, put the thumb over and fold it again. And what does that feel like? Feels a little bit different, doesn't it? But is it wrong? No, it's just different. So we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if you are forced into compliance every day of your life, how are you pursuing happiness under that creator? So natural law, also known as common law, by virtue of being mutual to all men, is a system of jurisprudence, which are virtuous principles administered not by elected or appointed servants, but by the people themselves who form tribunals or juries. The Constitution for the United States of America is the result of those constructive laws framed after the laws of nature and reason, and resulting in self-evident truths that are built upon the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments, and here is the kicker here, going back to the creator, okay? To secure these rights, governments are instituted amongst men, or among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Understanding that the Constitution is the law of the land, the sanctuary of our unalienable right to apply, to guard, and to construe that law through free and independent juries, uninhibited by legislators or magistrates, is the key to liberty, to be exercised or lost or forever lost. Fall short of that mark, and we all lose hope, or we lose all hope forevermore. When dominant men manipulate legislation to deviate from common law, just like these men who were trying to erect a state within the Commonwealth, they did apparently get it into Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution of a way in which to do that. When dominant men manipulate legislation to deviate from common law, we have subversion by domestic enemies from within. This is what we are to guard against. Moving on, self-government. There are three things in which people must participate to achieve and sustain self-government. Once making peace with their potter, the jury, committee men, and the militia. Everyone must, and I've got to say, you know, a good example of the militia is what's going on down there in the Houston and Galveston area down there. It's beautiful the way the people have just come forward. That's just a side note. Everyone must become a committeeman in their election district at least once in their lifetime. Every man 16 years or older must join the militia. And finally, everyone must serve on a jury when called. If we are not willing ourselves and do not teach our children as well to do these three things, we turn the reins of our government over to tyrants, and it's been happening for a number of years, apparently. Judicial tyrants, also known as judges, have seized control of the jury administration. This was never meant to be. The first grand jury was formed by the people in 1215 AD to take back their liberty from a tyrant prince, and our founding fathers did the same. Will we? The crack in the American Foundation, symbolized by the crack in the Liberty Bell, reveals the sins of our father. Thomas Jefferson's original version of the Declaration of Independence was followed by a long passage condemning King George for having failed to suppress the slave trade to America. According to Jefferson's autobiography, Congress struck the passage from the final version of the Declaration of Independence in deference to South Carolina and Georgia, peoples who wanted to continue the slave trade with Africa. This was America's moral downfall, a downfall which placed expediency above principle, respective men above respective God, a downfall which this generation is obligated to mend through repentance and deed. Then, while thumbing their nose at God, they printed the following Bible verse on the bell: "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land and unto all the inhabitants thereof." Three times the bell was forged, three times the finger of God cracked it. No doubt that faithful crack in this iconic symbol embodies God's judgment to come upon a contradictive America. This is the stricken passage, and he's quoting here, "He has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, contempt of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian King of Great Britain, determined to keep an open market where men should be bought and sold. He has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this repulsive commerce, and that this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished dye, he is now exciting those very people to rise in arms amongst us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people upon whom he also obtruded them, thus paying all former crimes committed against the liberties of one people and crimes which he urges them to commit against the lives of another." And that, I'm not seeing where that, King George maybe? I'm not sure who to give credit to that particular passage. It's quotes. Interpretation. The writer goes on, and like I said, I'm assuming it's John. Regardless of what attorneys or so-called constitutional scholars might say, the Constitution does not need an interpreter. As you will soon see, the Constitution was written by people, for people, in plain language. Where there may appear to be difficulty or controversy, you will find that the simple use of dictionaries such as Black's Law, Bouvier's, or Webster's, and the application of the science of law called American jurisprudence, we can easily discover the common sense meanings of the Constitution. Let's look at the word jurisprudence and law, the application of which is the key to the study of law. Juris is Latin for right of law. Law, at law, per Black's Fourth. Can someone mute who is coughing, please? Law, at law, as per Black's Fourth, is used to point out that a thing is to be done according to the course of the common law, that is natural law or God's law, and is distinguished from a proceeding in equity. So at law is an important phrase to remember. It's not in law, it's not by law, it is at law, is common law. Prudence is the careful, sensible application of discretion with the intent to avoid distress. That's prudence. Therefore, jurisprudence is the common sense application of common law without straining to reach its conclusion. In short, jurisprudence is the philosophy of common law. American jurisprudence is jurisprudence by which all judges are bound, and this is from 16 American Jurisprudence, second edition. Jurisprudence, by which all judges are bound by oath, is the science of law. By science, here is understood that connection of truths which is founded on principles either evident in themselves or capable of demonstration. A collection of truths of the same kind arranged in a methodical order. In a more confined sense, jurisprudence is the practical science of giving a wise interpretation to the law and making a just application of them to all cases as they arise. In this sense, it is the habit of judging the same question in the same manner, and by this course of judgments, forming precedents. And that, like I said, 16 American Jurisprudence, second edition. The next one is irreconcilable conflict. And this is from 16 American Jurisprudence, second edition, section 255. Irreconcilable conflict between statute and constitution is always resolved in favor of the constitutionality and the beneficiary. And it goes on to quote, in all instances where the court exercises this power to invalidate legislation on constitutional grounds, the conflict of the statute with the Constitution must be irreconcilable. Thus, a statute is not to be declared unconstitutional unless so inconsistent with the Constitution that it cannot be forced without a violation thereof. A clear incompatibility between law and the Constitution must exist before the judiciary is justified in holding the law unconstitutional. This principle is, of course, in line with the rule that This principle is, of course, in line with the rule that doubts as the constitutionality should be resolved in favor of the constitutionality and the beneficiary. Sounds like a little bit of doublespeak there, doesn't it? The Constitution cannot be understood without reading it in light of common law, which is to say common sense and biblical principles, whereas we read, quote, as to the construction with reference to the common law or to common law, an important canon of construction is that the constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement of nuisances by summary proceedings, and it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. And although there is no common law of the United States in a sense of a national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England adopted in the several states, in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may be said to had may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. That's 16 American Jurisprudence, second edition, section 114. Synopsis of the Constitution comes next. The Constitution for the United States of America, composed of 4,413 words, contains 7 articles. Each article is a binding contract in the form of a statute representing the will of the people, ordained as the law of the land. Each article is restricted by the Bill of Rights, and all exercised powers are to contribute to accomplishing at least one of the 6 purposes of government defined in the preamble, composed of only 52 words. The Constitution touches on the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. Article 1 is the legislative power. That's composed of 2,265 words, granted the seat of government to 2 legislative bodies, vested with 18 powers, being limited in scope and prohibited by the Bill of Rights, Congress chosen and controlled by the people, with the power of recall for a term of 2 years, and the Senate chosen and controlled by the state legislatures with the power to recall for a period of 6 years. Article 2, the executive power, is composed of 1,023 words. It granted a seat of government, a president and a vice president, vested with 4 powers and chosen by electors, not the people, for a term of 4 years, to keep order, manage the proceedings, and govern the administrative details of the legislature, being limited in scope and prohibited by the Bill of Rights. Article 3, judicial power, composed of 375 words, granted the seat of government judicial powers vested in 1 Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish, whose judicial power extend to all cases in common law and equity arising under this Constitution governed by the Bill of Rights. Article 4, full faith and credit clause, composed of 328 words, created new states and guaranteed to every state a Republican form of government. Article 5, process of amendments, composed of 143 words. Article 6, law of the land and oaths, composed of 153 words. Article 7, ratification of this Constitution, composed of 74 words, 39 signatories. That ends the reading. This is page 7, it says, of 100. Copyright date on it by the NLA was 2015. And it should be somewhere on the website, but I was not able to find it at with on short notice. Any questions? Any comments? We got 5 minutes. And like I said, in the comment section on the COS tab, under the COS tab, there will be a link, or there is a link to click on to find out how to sign up and how to get onto the course, what's required, and how to go about doing that. And I tell you, it's a very good course. I would strongly encourage all who are looking to, have leadership positions with the Committees of Safety or administrative positions with the NLA to please do take that course.
Well, do we have anybody that has a question?
Do we have anybody left on the call?
Yeah, they're all still here. Well, if there's no questions, then we'll go ahead and cut this off.
Well, I'd like to ask a question though. I mean, has anybody been down to where the hurricane hit down there and helped out? Or do you know of anybody down there who's kind of organized in the manner that the Committees of Safety are wanting to organize?
Well, those who pray, I ask that all of you pray for those people in Houston.
And the thing is that if they're involved down there, they're probably not going to be on the call tonight. So that makes sense, too.
Right. Yeah, we have less people on the call tonight than what we normally do, so it may be that some of them are there.
Especially from that part of the country, obviously,
right.
Yes. And that's a good thing.
Yep, it is. And I'll just say, Kansas Jam, this is Robert. I'll return your phone call as soon as this call is over.
Okay.